Great trial lawyers are made, not born. Welcome to Verdict Academy, preserving trial wisdom for trial lawyers. Join host Kevin Morrison, trial attorney in San Francisco, as he recreates those invaluable hallway conversations that remote work has made rare. Candid insights and hard-won lessons from America's most accomplished trial lawyers. Produced and powered by Law Pods.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Verdict Academy, where we bring you the best trial lawyers in the country to share their top three trial tips. I'm Kevin Morrison. I'm so pleased to welcome our guest today, Rahul Ravipudi. Rahul is a partner at Panish Shea Ravipudi in Los Angeles. Rahul's professional accomplishments are too numerous to mention, but I do want to share a thumbnail sketch of his impressive career to date. He is a member of the Big Four Elite Invitation-Only Trial Organizations, ABOTA, IATL, ISOB, and ACTL. He's also a member of the Inner Circle of Advocates, another invitation-only group made up of the country's top 100 plaintiff trial lawyers. Rahul has a long list of incredible results, both at trial and settlement. I think one of the most impressive, though, is a case on behalf of Paul Lee, who was a 19-year-old nonverbal autistic student who died aboard a school bus on a scorching hot day after the driver left him behind to go have a romantic liaison with a coworker. Not only did Rahul and his team obtain a $23 million plus settlement for his family, but the case resulted in the Paul Lee School Bus Safety Act, which was passed in 2016, signed into law by Governor Brown, that mandates that all California school buses be equipped with a child safety alarm. The alarm requires the driver to go to the back of the bus to turn off the alarm, ensuring that all seats have been visually checked by the driver before he or she leaves the bus. Rahul graduated from UC Riverside with a degree in economics and a minor in chemistry. Went on to law school at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, where he teaches trial advocacy. He and his wife, Smitha, who is a CEO of the USC Care Medical Group, have three boys together. He is a co-host, along with Ben Gideon, of Elevate, the Trial Lawyer podcast. And perhaps dearest to my heart, Rahul is a Buffalo Bills fan. As a Western New Yorker myself, it's in my blood. Rahul and I get to commiserate over the Buffalo Bills, and unfortunately, it tends to be their latest debacle. But you know what, Rahul, one day we're going to do it. Welcome to Verdict Academy.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Great to see you, and thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. You're in trial in that social media case. I'm not sure when this podcast is going to be rolled out. It'll probably be done by then, I hope. But thanks for doing this on a dark day. It's just incredible. I appreciate you showing up today.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. And you know what? You know this as much as anybody. When you're in trial, it's kind of the most alive you feel. And so even though it's a dark day and there's a lot going on and you're burning the candle at both ends during trial days, I have more energy than I've ever had. So
it's the best. That's perfect little segue into what do you find most compelling about being a trial lawyer, Rahul?
Most compelling. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. What do you find? I mean, you're most alive when you're in trial. I feel the same way. I walk out of court and I think, I can't believe I'm getting paid for this. Do you have the same feeling?
Absolutely. And you know, the thing about trial, so there's a couple of things. One, when you're in trial, you're singularly focused. There's only one thing on your mind, and it's that trial. All of the other things that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis and are important things, but they have to be a second priority while you're in trial. And so on a regular day, I'm convinced I've been suffering from an adult onset of ADHD. And then once I'm in trial, I realize it's just succumbing to a lot of the distractions as opposed to staying laser focused. The thing about trial and the way that I look at it is that the jury, those 12 people and the alternates, they've sacrificed so much of their lives. And I need to honor that. And I need to honor that with being incredibly efficient, incredibly prepared, and not to waste their time. And that then makes you spend a lot of time taking that piece of rock and then slowly cutting away at it to make it perfect so that you actually only put perfection in front of the jury. That obviously takes a lot of pressure, but that's a service that you're doing not just for the jury, but for your client and in gaining credibility and hopefully succeeding.
I always tell my team, it's like the distractions, the battle over the minutiae, the crap they throw at you to distract you. I'm convinced it's intentional to keep you off of your focus, right? There's so many ways to go down rabbit holes, but you can't succumb.
Totally. And we see it every year. It gets harder and harder to get a case ready for trial. Whether it's the motion practice that gets slapped on you, the novel experts that show up on the defense side that are in make-believe world, but you have to deal with it. All of those types of things just make it harder to even get into the courtroom. And those are some of the things that with preparedness, you can hopefully avoid.
100%. So you're trial sharp now, which is awesome. So let's talk about the three things that you want younger or less experienced trialers to know. We got the know the rules of evidence, we got no ego, and we've got think outside the box. So we're going to start from the top there. Know the rules of evidence. Are those important, Rahul? Do we need to know the rules of evidence?
I think so. I think the rules of evidence are kind of important. And what I tell people, especially when I was teaching, I wish I was still teaching now, and I'm going to get back to it, I promise, is that every courtroom's different and every judge is different and the way they apply the rules of evidence are different. And the best way to be prepared for anything, the expected and the unexpected, is to know all of the rules and the right way to do it. And then you can start to deviate according to what the judge will let you do. But it doesn't start in the courtroom. You know, just knowing the rules of evidence, hearsay, foundation, and all of the issues that come with it, that's wonderful when you're in the courtroom. But it's the best thing to know as you're preparing your case for trial. When you're taking the deposition of a defendant, and you're thinking about, okay, what do I need to get into evidence at the time of trial? If you don't ask the questions the right way, you may not be able to get those documents that you wanted in front of the jury. More importantly, a third-party witness or a doctor or an expert, if you're not laying the foundation in the right way prior to starting trial, you're going to have a lot of needless speed bumps, hurdles, and walls that you're going to need to overcome just to get your evidence in. And that's going to cause a lot of problems. And like I started, is going to waste time in front of this jury. It may actually have the judge think you don't know what you're doing. And so you want to kind of think about all of those things in the roadmap the moment you have your case so that you're working it up in the right way. And the best way to do that is just know the rules of evidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important to have a plan and like a checklist. So like give an example where we've got a trial, just a, you know, we'll call it a regular personal injury case. You got a treating doctor who, you know, the chance of getting him or her to trial are marginal maybe or difficult at best, right? They've got busy schedules. Let's say we want to videotape the doctor's testimony to preserve his or her trial testimony. So you got a bunch of documents, the critical documents you want to get in. How do you go about deciding how much prep time do you go in ahead of that doctor's dep to say, hey, these are the three documents I need? Or what is your general approach, Rahul, that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, general approach, taking just a baby step back, is I always have my jury instructions with me. And so the key jury instructions on a case, I have those. And then as the documents come in, you want to always make sure that you stay ahead of it, identify all of the documents. We get one advantage that I think is an unbelievable advantage is we have constant contact and availability with our client. And so we get to know all of the medical doctors that they're treating with. We get authorizations and can have access to all of those documents, and we can stay ahead of it if we choose to stay ahead of it. And so then as the records come in, as I get to actually talk to my client, then I start to understand what are the important documents. If we have the luxury of already having a medical expert retained, then I get to talk to that medical expert and figure out what's important to him or her. And as I understand what's important to them and how that's going to apply into their trial presentation, then I start to cull down to, okay, what key documents do I need this treating doctor to lay the proper foundation for or just talk about so that my medical expert can testify completely at the time of trial. And then through that, what you'll start to see is that you're going to get agreements from the other side. Once they know all of these things are going to be admissible at the time of trial, you have to meet and confer on all the exhibits. And then you're going to talk to them and go, hey, you're not actually going to object to this document, are you? And if you are, then these are the things that I'm going to do. And it's coming in. And I'm going to tell the jury, or the jury's going to know, you're the one who's wasting all of our time making me go through this exercise. And then you'll get the agreements on that. But I think what you want to do, especially with the treater, Kevin, is I think you want to make sure that those treating doctors are, your direct exam is 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Max. So.
Yeah. It's funny. Every time we do a fair amount of videotape stuff at trial, just because of that, where the treaters are not available, or because of the trial scheduling, which is my single biggest headache at trial, is getting witnesses there, and the order, you know, constantly changes. Ugh. They got the schedules, right? It's just a nightmare.
Totally.
So it's important. But every time, so I call myself relentlessly ruthless about cutting videotape trial testimony. Despite that, every time I'm trying to watch the video, like, oh my God, this is so boring and too long, Morrison. What did you do? Like, you yeah. know, it just, like, you can't get it tight enough, can you?
You can't. Even like the little pauses in between the question and the answer, anything you can do to cut it to keep it interesting. But the most interesting ones are the ones that are 15 to 30 minutes. Anything longer than that, it's just too long. It's yeah. too much.
It is. I mean, sometimes there's a legal reason why you need stuff, foundation or whatever. There are occasional exceptions. But in this age where our attention span is getting smaller and smaller, at least speaking for myself, you know, the scrolling, the constant scrolling, the zipping around, you're watching the program, you're like, oh, this is boring. Click, 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 click. You got to keep their attention. And you do that with zippy exams for sure.
Yeah, the social media trial, you're hitting the points right there with the scrolling. Yeah.
Oh, I plead guilty, addicted, unfortunately. I mean, how can you not be? It doesn't feed your brain and all the dopamine stuff, and you get little hits, right?
Unbelievable. And yeah. Now that we get to actually unveil all the internal documents and the public's starting to see them, I'm hoping everybody is realizing how dangerous these platforms are.
Are you suggesting these companies knew this going in, Rahul?
No, I would never do such a thing.
Okay, so know the rules of evidence, very important. And it also kind of shows the other side, you know what you're doing, right? Like, okay, these guys are no joke. They know how to get stuff in, and they're going to be a problem at trial. That's another reason you do that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, obviously, there's the flip side, too. If you know the rules of evidence, you know exactly what the defense is doing, and you're going to be able to cut them off at the pass and make sure that things they're trying to do maybe are not admissible and should not be in front of a jury. And so what comes in and what stays out are both important parts of a trial.
And with fewer people trying cases, because of many of the reasons you suggested at the beginning, we have fewer lawyers who know how to take good depositions, and worse depositions. We got people asking questions that will never see the light of day. And frankly, half of them overstating things a little bit, but many of them don't even understand why they're asking the question.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, discovery is probably the worst word for what pretrial workup is. You need to have a plan. And when you go in with a witness, third party, treating doctor, defendant, if you don't go in with a plan as to what you want to accomplish, then you're running the risk of causing more harm than good to your case and creating more confusion.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's move on to your second tip for younger and less experienced trial lawyers. No ego. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is literally that. I mean, we're in the practice of trying cases, and the practice of law is exactly that. I wish we could just come out of law school and be perfect and just be that perfect trial lawyer who gets everything right, anticipates every single issue, argues everything so eloquently, and then you just win, 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 win. But this is, every case is a snowflake. Every legal issue is a novel issue. And there's always something to learn. And I'll just speak from personal experience right now. You know, I love trying cases with other lawyers, because whether they have more experience or less experience than me, I learn something new every time. And in this trial with Mark Lanier right now, I haven't had the opportunity to try a case with him before this. And he is amazing. And there's so many things that he does that, quite frankly, I can't do. It just doesn't fit my personality style. And like my partner, Brian Panish, there's things that he does I can't do. If I tried to do it, it just wouldn't even work, you know, with the way that I am. But then there's so many things he does that do fit my trial style, but I wouldn't know unless I got to see it. And if I thought I was the greatest thing since sliced bread before getting to try a case with Brian, before getting to be with Mark Lanier, before getting to be with so many other amazing lawyers, then I wouldn't have even learned from them. I'd say, oh, I'm better than them. And why miss an opportunity to get better? And so no ego means that throughout your entire practice and being a trial lawyer is that I wake up every day knowing I can be better and I want to get better. How do I get better? And I think that really helps and it steepens your learning curve and then it'll make you a better lawyer over time. And that's what I mean by it.
Yeah, that's incredible. A lot of that's mentoring and learning from the best. I have a story where I was mentored by a guy named Tom Caselli early on in my career, who was this great athlete, super energetic, very entertaining guy, hilariously funny, big man on campus kind of guy, very blue collary in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, he succumbed to glioblastoma and died very young. Yeah, just brutal. And I was just devastated by his death. And for a while after, I tried to be Tom. You know, I tried to be like him or mimic his ways. And it did not go well. It didn't go well because it wasn't me. Now, can I use things that Tom did? I do. I try to. Because they resonate with me by doing them in my way. And can I do things that Rahul does? If they resonate with me and they're part of my personality, yes, I can incorporate, but there's things that you do that I just don't resonate. I'm sure Mark Lanier, I think he's a very religious guy in Texas, right? So I'm sure he talks a lot about, at least he was in Texas juries, about preaching and stuff. And while I have my own faith system, it doesn't necessarily work in San Francisco or Los Angeles, that style, right? And so you have to be yourself, but you never stop learning from great trial lawyers, right? I mean, you've had some great mentors.
I've had the best mentors, and it's so fascinating, and it's awesome. And I think that one of the things that one of the silver linings from this whole COVID epidemic and the plaintiff trial bar is that I feel like all of these amazing trial lawyers across the country are so much more accessible. They've been available to teach now that everything has gotten a little bit more on remote platforms like Zoom. There's webinars on it. There's just so much access to everybody and so many different people to learn from. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, your podcast, Elevate, you got the great guests. Hopefully this one in a slightly different format. There's ways to learn that you don't actually have to be in person with the person. You can actually watch them. I'm curious, Rahul, did you ever try a case by yourself, like no other lawyers, just you?
By myself, I always had at least one lawyer. So, you know, could be a junior lawyer for my office, somebody.
Sure.
I just like it. You know, it's fun to have a little company, even if I'm putting on 99% of the witnesses. I want to make sure other people have a chance.
Sure.
Yeah. How about you?
You know, it's funny. The first, I think I got a few years on you. And so the first five cases I tried by myself like bringing the banker's boxes to court. This is pre-cell phone era. We're talking calling the expert witnesses on the payphone at noon, helping to God they'd be there at 1:30 because if they weren't, you didn't have anybody, you know, or you had to call your client and this something like that. So I didn't know what I was doing, of course, and just kind of got a lot of bruises. But my first time I tried a case with somebody, like, oh my gosh, this is like game changing. It's so much more fun. It's like, how did I ever do it? You know, I can't even imagine doing it by myself now. It's so much more interesting and fun to bounce stuff off, to share, to learn, and we're always learning. I always learn from anybody, the defense lawyer, and how to treat people, how to do, you know, how to communicate with human beings. Because at the end of the day, all we're doing is communicating with that jury, representing the community. You got to be human. You got to be you. And they see through phonies right away. And you just got to be yourself. That's all there is to it.
Totally. Totally. And if you're trying to hoodwink someone, it's over.
Over.
You know, you've lost all credibility. And especially with strangers, they don't have any reason to trust you except the words you say in front of them during that limited time. And if you waste it and you do that, it's over.
They pick up on everything. I'll tell you, interestingly, you're in trial now. I'm on a jury panel right now in San Francisco on a criminal case, which is so fun. I'm not
have
in the box
ever
yet.
Onto a jury?
Believe it or not, I was on an alternate in a insurance bad faith case. And at the end of the case, I raised my hand and asked the judge if I could deliberate. And the judge said, you know what, Mr. Morrison, I've already conferred with the counsel. We anticipate he asked this question. You've got their permission. So I got to deliver as long as I was not the fourth person. She said, this has got, you cannot be the fourth person and you cannot vote. I got it. I will not. And so I got to watch the deliberations, which was hilarious and, you know, subject of another story. Incredible experience. But now just in a panel, it's a criminal case. It's a short misdemeanor case. I haven't made it in the box yet. Hopefully on Tuesday, we'll find out. But it's just how really interesting to how the judge treats people, how the lawyers treat people, how they interact. Are you polite? Are you robotic? Are you staring at your notes? Are you making eye contact? When someone says, I lost, you know, my father died or my wife died last year, are you genuine or sorry for your loss, kind of check that off the box thing, right? It's all about that kind of stuff.
Yep. I had a defense lawyer make a prospective juror cry because he was trying to rehab her. It was a brain injury case. And this poor juror, she lost her husband who was in a horrible crash and suffered a traumatic brain injury and then ultimately died from it. And it hit too close to home. And so she said, I can't sit through this trial. And there were a lot of things she said where she said she wouldn't even be fair to the plaintiff on this particular case, which is why the defense lawyer wanted to rehab her. And to your point, Kevin, he's like, I know that your husband had gotten a bad car crash and suffered from brain injury and ultimately died from it. But here's my question. Can you set that aside and hear the evidence in this case and apply it to the law? And she just started crying. And then he said, hey, sorry, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. And she responded, I think you like doing that.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
The panel just went dead silent. But you're 100% right. Actually, being a human being, and part of it is who you are. And part of it is if you're so nervous about what you're supposed to be doing in there, you're not focusing on what's actually happening in there. And that connection with the jury only happens if you're actually interested in the connection and they see that.
Yeah, 100%. You gotta like people. I mean, if you don't like people, you're not going to be a good trial lawyer. You're just not. You might be good at cross-examining engineers, but you're not going to connect with people. And it's funny, yeah. When my first couple of trials, I was so nervous, Rahul, so nervous. You know, I think I did my first jury selection from the table. You know, I didn't want to get up because you're so focused on your own. You're so in your own head. You're so in your own performance. I wonder what they think of me. And once you say, you know what, it's not about me. It's about my client. It's about the jury. Get out of your head. Who cares about if your tie is perfectly straight or you got a spot of coffee on your collar? It's about the case and about them. And once you get out of your head and make sure it's about them, you become much more comfortable in your own skin, I think.
You're so right. This actually makes me reflect back to the first episode of our Elevate podcast. We had Rick Friedman on and he said, you know, it's like, we as trial lawyers, we think we're so important and that we're everything that matters. And there hasn't been one time after a verdict where somebody comes in and one of the jurors says, the only thing that mattered was you, Mr. Friedman. You know, it's they want to know about the client and about the, you know, the victim. And that's where their hearts are at. And then within a day, they even forget the names of the lawyers on the case because 100%. We aren't that important.
We're furniture. We're furniture, man.
Exactly. So you're right. A loose tie, a spot of coffee, scuffs on your shoes. If that's where everything's focused for the jury, then we aren't doing our job anyways.
Yes, I can't agree with you more. All right, last third tip here. Think outside the box. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, as I was thinking about this statement, I think about two different things. The first is, I think there's a lot of cut and pasting that happens nowadays and probably even way back when. And, you know, if a motion is to be filed and you cut and pasted the draft of the motion, forget the name, you know, you may have not even replaced the names properly and you file it thinking that's the way to win, then you're running the risk that you're not even going to win that motion, in part for two reasons. Just because somebody else did it and won doesn't mean it was done right. And so it's nice to learn from people and it's nice to see how arguments were framed, but actually doing the work yourself as if it's cut from whole cloth you may actually have additional arguments that were neglected or forgotten in the person that gave it to you that you didn't know about unless you actually did the work and started to think on your own. And that goes to all aspects of trial work and trial practice. Just because somebody did it this way doesn't mean it's the right way. It's just the way they did it. And getting to hear those things and then reevaluating it and going, well, I'm going to do it different because the law says it should be done differently. This particular argument is a better way to do it or whatever is a really important thing to develop from the very, very beginning. And I think that only has a finer point that needs to get highlighted with the advent of AI and everything that's coming and the tools that are available for us. They're all tools. Prior motions are tools. Other people's thoughts are tools. And AI are tools. But you use the tools. You don't have them do your work for you. So that's one part of the thinking outside the box is just not being confined by what other people tell you or have done. Just do the work. Second is there's always different ways to present things. And this is circling back to getting to experience what other trial lawyers are doing and then going into trial. And I think authenticity is important, but sometimes people use authenticity as an excuse for not getting uncomfortable. And the trial room, the courtroom is not really a place where you should always just feel comfortable. You got to be comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable. And so thinking about different ways to try the case and to present evidence to a jury so that it's interesting to them, you got to keep doing that and then test it out before you go into the courtroom because sometimes you don't really want to belly flop in front of the jury either. And so I'll just give one quick example. I know we're running short on time, but in this trial I had down in San Diego where my client was a white belt jiu-jitsu student who got his neck broken by his black belt instructor and ended up becoming an incomplete quad. It was a really hard case. You have assumption of risk issues and everything else that comes with it. And we had a really cool expert who'd never testified before, this guy, Henner Gracie. And Henner is part of the lineage of the family, the Gracie family, who brought Brazilian jiu-jitsu to the forefront and is now a worldwide sport. And so Henner comes and he goes, hey, man, so how are we going to demonstrate to the jury all of my opinions? He goes, you want me to bring some mats?
You volunteer the defense attorney.
That's not really my style. You know, I go, but you know what? Let's do it. Yeah. And so I said, let's do it. And so he gets the mats out on the courtroom floor, and then he uses me as the practice dummy. And as he starts to explain, without actually doing too many crazy things on me, starts to explain the mechanics of what went wrong, I could just see the jury's eyes. You know, they go, I get it. I get this case now. And so for me, that was, you know, thinking outside the box and outside my comfort zone, because that's not normally part of the way I would try a case. But I had the most fun I've ever had at that moment in trial. And just trying to figure out how things can resonate is an important thing that you should always be thinking about.
Awesome example. I know another one I like to discuss anyway, because you got to keep the jury entertained, right? They're not just, they have to be entertained. I mean, they're sitting there out of their minds. And I've been in jury selection one day, and yeah. I'm falling asleep. It's like, oh my God, get this over with, right? So I had an expert radiologist on the stand once, and he was so cocky, but there's a couple of things that I could get out of him that I knew he'd go along with me. So he's just so desperate to show the jury. He's like, hey, come out of the box and show the jury this, all that. And it, you know, basically one of them was how the accident happened, because I need to establish that there was oil was dripping underneath this big storage box. Because ambulance reports are really helpful, aren't they? Yes, they are. And could you read the history to the jury about what happened here? And he just like said the whole theory of the case. He just read it to the jury in a very anime way. I'm like, thank you, doctor. I got nothing else. You know, so you just it's so fun, right? You gotta, and they're all paying attention because he doesn't really know where it's going or why it's going, but you have to take some risk to your point. And you have to entertain them. It's just so important because they just sit there for all day. It's just they're out of their minds. Got to do something for them.
Yeah. And part of it also is that courtrooms not necessarily designed to be interesting. A person sitting in a witness stand, you know, and then you're
so sterile.
Far away. So sterile. And yeah. That's not a conversation. And so anything that you can do to make it more of a conversation where it actually feels like real life, jurors really appreciate that, you know? And then texture. So I had this case where an ambulance struck a guy on a motorcycle, broke his entire face. He had so many surgeries, so much metal inside his face now. But if you see him and you didn't know, you wouldn't know what happened to him, right? And so one of the things we did was we took the CTs of his skull and face after the collision, and then had one of these medical companies, Stryker, who creates a lot of these, you know, the metal that goes inside for surgeries. And they actually did a crystal skull with all of the broken bones in that shape so that a jury could actually feel it and touch it and go, oh my God, this is unbelievably traumatic. So different types of things that you can use just to kind of get the jury understanding the issues, get witnesses off the stand so that they're actually teaching and in their normal environment. It just makes it so much fun. And it's, if it's fun for you, it's probably fun for the jury too. So
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I could talk to you all day, man. You're so likewise, fun. You're so interesting. Kevin. Any final words of wisdom for younger trial lawyers who, you know, trying to figure out how to get in the courtroom?
Yeah, I think I would just advise any lawyer who wants to get into the courtroom. First of all, anybody who's interested in this practice, thank you. Helping victims of corporate negligence and other types of things that are really preventable, I think is really requires personal passion. And so if you've got that passion, then you've got the interest. And if you have the interest, reach out to lawyers, talk to anybody that you want to talk to, try and steepen your learning curve. And then just get out there and do it. Anybody says you can't do it, they're wrong. You can do it. So have the confidence to know that you can go in the courtroom, and the best way to get better is to get the reps in. And that's part of the reason I try to bring as many lawyers as I can into trial with me. I want to get people those reps. So anybody who says you can't do it, you got it. If you need my help, reach out anytime.
Awesome, Rahul. Thank you for everything you've done, you've already done for our state, for our communities, and they're going to keep doing. I know you will. And thank you so much for your work.
Thank right back at you, Kevin. You're amazing. And so looking forward to seeing you again soon. And thank you for having me.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Verdict Academy. If today's insights resonated with you, please subscribe and share with colleagues. In a world where we see each other less, learning from experienced trial lawyers matters now more than ever. Join us next time. Produced and powered by LawPods.